This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular. Rick is off hunting down bits of wild Florida for our next episode, but we do have a guest here today, David Sloan, who is the author of a fantastic new book called How Key West Killed JFK, The Shocking Story Hidden in America's Southernmost City. David, thank you for being here.
It's really great to be here.
Now, I am a big fan of all your books. This one's a little bit different than a lot of the other books you've written, though. And it caught my attention because I was not alive when JFK died, but I have always been fascinated as to what actually happened. And I like any type of intrigue like this. And I found out about your book while my husband and I were in the middle of watching Death by Lightning, which was the story of the James Garfield assassination. And I just got it in the mail last week. I'm digging into it. But what I love about it is that it is just, first of all, the research is fantastic, but also the ties you make. So for all the people who might not be aware of this book and haven't read it yet, I think the story about how you found out about what led you down this rabbit hole. So if you talk a little bit about what you were doing, you weren't setting out to find who killed JFK, right?
No, I never set out to find out who killed him. And it's interesting because when I was about 11 years old, my family relocated to Dallas. And so I lived in the shadow of the assassination. You know, it was like probably 15 miles from Dealey Plaza is where I grew up. And Marina Oswald had moved to Richardson, Texas, where I was after the assassination. So there was a lot of it around, but it was never something where I thought, hey, I'm going to get involved in this. There's so many conspiracies out there, and a lot of it, I always looked at it a little suspiciously. But you fast forward all these years, and here I am in Key West, Florida, and I like solving mysteries. I like digging into the lost history, and the biggest mystery in the Florida Keys is where is Bum Fardo, the fire chief who disappeared in 1976 after he was pretty much convicted of trafficking cocaine. A friend and I decided, well, let's go find him. And I got the FBI files through a FOIA request and started following his path. And this led to the whole world of the Cuban exiles and the CIA and a lot of the Cold War era stuff that was going on in the Florida Keys. And through that, I started seeing things about the Kennedy assassination. And there were reports of Lee Harvey Oswald fueling up at the docks in Stock Island. There were reports of Jack Ruby selling guns out of Isla Mirada. And there were reports of Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby together at the Key West airport.
Wow.
So I see that report and George Feraldo, pretty well-respected guy in town. And his report was very believable. Now, he had passed away, but I tracked down his wife, and because this report said that he had photographs of the two of them together. So I called her and I said, is this true? And she said, oh, yeah, I still have the photograph. And I tried to arrange to get together with her, and she passed away before we were able to do that. But that let me know that those photos do exist and that there was some truth to what was in these reports. And it sent me down this crazy path. And what I really wanted to do at first was tell this story that nobody talks about the mafia and their stranglehold on the Florida Keys and about the real threats that were coming from Cuba and from the Soviet Union and about this massive CIA base at the gateway to the Keys, right on the mainland, where they had thousands of CIA agents, and then another 20 to 30,000 Cuban exiles all working for them to take down Castro. And it's really a spy versus spy type story where you're like, I cannot believe this. But perhaps the strangest thing is there was a Key West baker named Gilberto Lopez. And in a lot of the files, he's reported to be involved in the assassination. And a lot of researchers have said that he was a second gunman. But he left Key West. He was in Tampa when President Kennedy was there. And then a few days later, he crossed the border from Texas into Mexico right after the assassination. And he boarded a plane to Cuba and disappeared and was never heard from again.
Wow. And you have no idea what happened to him, or do you?
I do now. I was looking at this, you know, I was researching his story and I spoke to his brother-in-law and I was able to make some connections to the Tampa Mafia. And then I thought, you know, he might still be alive. I'm going to go to Cuba and see if I can find him. And I called my friend Cheryl Sanchez Simmons, who's a really great researcher. And I asked her for some help getting me some contacts in Cuba. And she called me back. She goes, "You don't have to go to Cuba. He returned to the United States in 1995.
Wow.
So,
and I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but at any point was the CIA paying attention to this?
Well, that's the big question, because the CIA and the FBI failed to tell the Warren Commission much of anything about Gilberto Lopez, even though their own investigations showed that he was likely involved. So later on, when the House Select Committee on Assassinations did their investigation, they said that the FBI and the CIA, they pretty much scolded them, saying, "What the hell are you doing leaving that information out? That was very important." So there's documentation that does make this guy very suspicious. And one of the reasons is he had so many parallels to Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, his escape route was the same one that Oswald had taken just a few weeks before. You know, they both left their wives at the same time and moved somewhere else. They both got in fights over their communist beliefs. They were both members of the Fair Play for Cuba committee. So there were a lot of parallels. And then the fact that he was able to return and live in plain sight and escape journalists and investigators, it raises a lot of red flags. So he died in 2021, but what I found out is that he had a daughter. And I tracked down his daughter, and she shared 60 years of missing history.
What did she tell you? I mean, not all of it. You have to read the book, but I mean,
She told me a lot. So some of the most interesting things, a lot of people have written about Gilberto Lopez, but nobody's been able to place him in Dallas. We know he crossed the border in Texas the night of the assassination, but nobody's been able to say, yes, he was in Dallas. The brother-in-law was able to tell me that, yeah, he heard his sister arguing with Gilberto about going to Dallas. And then the daughter told me, she said, yes, my dad told us that he was in Dallas when the president was assassinated. He did not admit to being part of the assassination, but he told her, yes, he was there, and he attended communist meetings there that day.
Wow. That's, go on, please. I don't want to stop you.
She also talked about his violence. You know, she said that he was a very violent man, and she talked about his ideologies. He was very much pro-Castro and pro-communism. When they were growing up in Cuba, she said that he fashioned a blackjack, like out of the thick electrical wires, and that he used to go out just to beat up anti-Castro people. And he was violent to his wife and to his children. And she said that it was like he became possessed. He'd push her up against the wall, and his eyes were very light, and they'd become very red, where, you know, the pupils completely disappeared. And she said he looked like he was demon possessed. So we know that he has violent tendencies. And the daughter shared a lot more on that. So what we get with these things, Lee Harvey Oswald died almost immediately after the assassination. Gilberto Lopez lived almost another 60 years. And because of their similarities, I think we can look at his life and help figure things out with Oswald. And that'll bring us closer to proving a conspiracy. And I think, you know, because I started out wanting to tell the story, which was just the cool story of Key West. And it was the last month before the book was going to come out that all the new information arose. And so it really became two books. But probably the most groundbreaking thing, the first photos of Gilberto Lopez are published in the book. Before this, the only photo that existed of him was taken when he was crossing the border, when he was at the Mexico City airport before he escaped to Cuba. And it was taken at night, and he was wearing sunglasses, and you really can't get a feel for what he looks like. And now we have photos of him going from 1960 up until a few years before he died. People will be able to look at the photos and they'll notice him from other places. I think they'll notice him in training camp photos. They'll notice him at Dealey Plaza. I mean, I think that this information, once it gets in the hands of other researchers, is going to be some of the most valuable information to come out on the assassination since the House Select Committee of Assassinations did their investigation in the 70s.
Wow, that's incredible. And I want to point out that a big part of why you were able to do this is because you live there and these are people you live like. I don't think an academic could have come down there and found all this.
No, you know, there were a lot of things like you see the names of people and the woman that he was married to, that Gilberto Lopez was married to, you know, her name is Blanche Leon. But then I looked at the names of her kids and one of the names in there, it's like, oh, I know that name because they're tied in to Bomfardo. And so I was able to make a Tampa Mafia connection through those names. And that's something anybody who hadn't, I mean, even most people in Key West wouldn't have made that connection. You have to have a pretty intimate knowledge. So I was very fortunate on that level to be able to connect some of these dots. And the same thing where there's a construction company down here that Jimmy Hoffa and the Tampa Mafia were trying to infiltrate. And their name shows up many times, but it's oftentimes misspelled. So if someone was trying to search for them, they wouldn't find these other key elements of the story. And I was able to read reports and say, oh, you know, Capeno's construction in Stark Island is, in fact, Capeno construction in Stock Island.
Stock Island.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, and because you have to realize you had American CIA agents who were dealing with Cuban exiles. So there were accents involved and, you know, people were writing everything down by hand. So there were mistranslations. And I was able to pick up on a lot of these as well.
That's amazing. I mean, this whole thing is fascinating. I have to ask, though, are you at all concerned for your safety?
Yes. When I was writing about Bomfardo, the grandson of one of the mafia people that I wrote about sent me an email saying that he was not too pleased with the way I was talking about his family. One of the things that I've always tried to do is be very respectful to the people involved, because just because someone's associated with the Tampa Mafia, you know, it doesn't mean that they're a bad person. Key West was a very different place and you didn't have all the tourist money flowing in. So somebody would be helping a friend or helping a family, doing whatever it took to survive on the island. And that money might have been flowing uphill to the Tampa Mafia, but a lot of times they didn't know it. And then for the ones who did know, you have to realize when the Tampa Mafia asked you to do something, your two answers are yes or you disappear.
I will never say anything bad about the Mafia. Let's just leave it at that. Yeah. I think that there's a lot to be said. Not that I believe they had anything. I don't know if they had anything to do with JFK disappearing, but I think a lot of people don't understand the way some of those systems work. But it sounds like you've handled it respectfully. And, you know, I was surprised to see that right in the very first pages of the book to see the Traficantes show up. I'm like, oh, this book's going everywhere. It's thoroughly enjoyable. And I think it's definitely going to be fascinating for anybody who cares about Key West, anybody who's fascinated by JFK. It's just very compelling.
Yeah, it's a crazy history, and I'm really surprised that it's one that didn't come to light sooner. And I feel very fortunate that I was able to be a part of it and telling the story, because, you know, it's really
this story wouldn't exist without the CIA files, all the JFK files, and especially the people in Key West who are willing to talk to me. You know, there's some really key players who shared their stories that made this book what it is. And I'm just grateful to be part of it.
I'm grateful you wrote it. I cannot recommend it enough to all of our listeners. I think it is going to change how we all think about the JFK assassination. And I think it's going to bring attention to Key West in a new and different way, which is saying something.
I think all we have to worry about is I'm more concerned about the CIA than the Tampa Mafia.
Well, as well you should be, but I think it's too public. I can't imagine you would just disappear, but we will be checking on you every week just to look for proof of life.
Right. The way these Zoom meetings are dropping out, it's almost like somebody's trying to tap in on us.
Yes. So those of you listening probably don't realize this because we have a wonderful producer. Just every 5 minutes or so on the podcast, the Zoom just drops out, and it does feel a little, if I were a conspiracist, I would be very suspicious, but I'm more inclined to blame the bubblegum and rubber band internet technology that I know exists in the Lower Keys. So,
yeah, I think you're probably right on that.
Now, one last question. Do you know what happened to Bomfardo?
Yes.
Are you going to tell us?
Here's the interesting thing. So when I switched from Bomfardo to writing about the JFK stuff, it all really lines up as a prequel. You know, with Kennedy, everything stops, you know, in 63, 64. But that's when the Bomfardo stuff really starts heating up. And, you know, our research, I found out a lot of things about where he went. There's still some debate about, you know, nobody's found the body yet, but we pretty much know what happened to him and where he went and how things ended.
And where can people read about that?
I'm hoping to have that book out sometime beginning of next year.
Fantastic. I'm going to put a link up to your website in our show notes. We have a couple of links. We have a way for people to buy the book. We have a piece you wrote about Bomfardo in the show notes and the website about your book. So people will be able to get this book and then stay in touch with you and find all the ways to connect with you so that they can read anything else you write, because this is all fascinating stuff.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
No, thanks for being on the podcast, David. And I look forward to seeing you the next time we're down in the Lower Keys.
It'll be nice to see you in person without the technical difficulties.
Technology will always fail you. That's Moscow rules, right?
Yep. And humans never will.
All right. All right, Dave, thanks for being here today. Take care, and we will talk to you soon. As always, Rick and I would like to thank those of you who support us with your monthly contributions. Thank you to Ryan Worthington, John Bowne, Angela Connolly, Natalie Zachrick, Davita Breyer, Carol Miller, Elise Smith, Bet's Boys Adventure. Thank you both for the very sweet Christmas card you sent to us. Brian Woodall, Brad Sager, Stephanie Hugely, I know I'm saying that wrong now. Sorry, Stephanie. Kelly Sturdy and Sean Coulter. Please, please, please feel free to support us. Just go to our show at floridaspectacular.buzzsprout.com and click to join the Florida Splaining Club. People who support us at the top level get monthly or every other month swag, depending on how great of the stuff we find is. And we send everybody periodic goodies throughout the year. So please consider supporting the podcast. It's easy, it's inexpensive, and we really do appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.